All right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another day of Saber Sims DFS Office Hours. Today is Thursday, January 29th of 2026. Looking ahead here, we had golf tee off earlier this morning. Good luck to all of you playing some golf. We had some League of Legends action earlier this morning and tonight as well. We had COD slates today. We have an 8-game NBA slate and then a 15-game NHL slate. So plenty of DFS action coming at you today. For those of you who are new here, welcome. My name is Andrew, one of the coaches over here at SaberSim. This is a show where we go over how to use the SaberSim app, answer any and all DFS related questions, get your questions in one of three ways here. First off, send us an email, support@sabersim.com. Second, post it live in the YouTube chat. Third way, post it in the Office Hours channel in our Discord server. If you're not in our Discord and want to get access to that channel, there is a link in the description of this video. You also get access to our similar channels, individual sport channels, and you get access to the rest of the SaberSim team. Just can't say enough good things about the Discord. But with that said, we do this show Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern, and then we do this show on Saturdays at 12:30 p.m. Eastern. So you can tune in any one of those days to get your questions answered. All right. With that said, let's get SaberSim pulled up on the screen. I had one question come in prior to the show, so we will start there. Probably jump into the slate demo while we wait for more questions to roll in. All right. First question today. I understand the purpose of Portfolio Plus generally, but at what point does it create diminishing returns? For example, I built my PGA lineups today and had a discrepancy of about 150% of average ROI for my lineups when looking at Portfolio Plus versus Minuniques. Is sacrificing that much ROI for the sake of using Portfolio Plus versus three min uniques, an example that only drops the average a few percentage points, really worth it? Okay, this is a very good question. So I think that in a perfect world where you have an unlimited bankroll and you can play DFS forever, that you would actually want to use ROI because you're basically optimizing and saying like, hey, I'm never going to go broke. I can play DFS forever. And in that case, you want the path that leads to the highest ROI. Most people aren't living in that reality, right? And I think especially in week-to-week sports, golf, MMA, football, NASCAR, to kind of name a few, you want to be even more careful because if you look at like an NFL regular season, right? There are 18 main slates in the regular season. Okay, well, there are 18 main slates versus a sport like NBA where you play NBA 30 days a month for 6 months. So that is 180 days of main slates. So in an NBA season, you get 10 times as many main slates as you do in NFL regular season, right? What do we know about sample sizes, right? What we know is the bigger the sample size, the closer to the average you get, right? So like, for instance, if we flipped a coin 10 times, well, the odds are 50-50. But if you only do it 10 times, you can get 8-2, you can get 7-3, you can get 6-4. You're not always going to get that like perfect 5-for-5 split, right? But if we did the example 100 times, 1,000 times, 10,000 times, we're going to move closer and closer to 50-50 split because like the law of large numbers and like everything moves closer to the mean, the bigger the sample size gets, right? Week-to-week sports are some of the highest variance DFS sports you can play because they only happen once a week, right? You're playing golf. You're building lineups every Thursday, tournaments running Thursday to Sunday, and then it starts over. It's not like, hey, Thursday main slate, Friday main slate, Saturday main slate, Sunday main slate, right? So you need to be even more careful in those week-to-week sports because you're not getting as many chances to realize your edge, and the variance is going to be higher, right? It's like when we play a 10-game slate versus a single-game slate, right? We're like, hey, the showdowns are higher variance. Why? Because it's only one game. And players can get hurt. Players can have ceiling outcomes. The game could be a blowout, and it could be way different than what the spread is. The spread could be 3 and one team could win by 20, right? So we always want to be careful when either one, there are less games on the slate, or two, there are just less main slates available. So I would highly recommend using portfolio over uniques, especially in golf, where you are, you know, playing once a week, right? So I think that is the safest approach. Now, obviously, you don't have to do that, right? You can play different. You can use uniques. And if that's your preferred method, then okay, you know, go with it. You like that route better. There's definitely more than one path to victory. It's not like every single user who is winning at golf is using portfolio, right? And even people in the DFS space, you know, they're using uniques or other methods or things like that. So I think it's okay to experiment. I would just caution you to be very, very careful in some of these week-to-week sports. All right, next question. What is the difference when lineups are being built with Sims versus Optimizer? Good question. So what we're talking about is in the settings, the build mode, right? So Sim mode, what it does is we randomly take a certain number of Sims from each game on the slate and play those out, and then we build one lineup. So for instance, let's say we take 5 games of each game on the slate. We have 25,000 Sims for every game. So from the 25,000, we're going to take 5 from this one, 5 from that one, 5 from that one. We're going to play those out and we're going to build one lineup. When we go to build lineup 2, we take 5 random new Sims of the 25,000. And then we play those out and then we build lineup 2 and lineup 3. The thing with Sim mode is we are randomly building these lineups. The lineups, we effectively don't know how good the lineup is until it gets into the pool and it gets graded over there. The difference with optimizer mode is we are using the average projections from all 25,000 Sims. So we use the average score, the player score across the 25,000 Sims, and we build the highest projected lineup first, the second highest projected, the third, the fourth. So in optimizer mode, you actually are getting your best lineup and then your second best and then your third best in sequential order. So we recommend Sim mode for like tournaments or GPPs. We recommend optimizer mode for like double ups, head to heads type of cash game, more cash game style formats. And then last thing with that, the Sim diversity controls how many Sims of each game we take. At 10 Sim diversity, we take one Sim. At 0 Sim diversity, we use all the Sims. And then everything in between is a sliding scale. So at 10, we use 1. At 9, we might use 10, and then 50, and then 100. And we're using either more and more Sims as you put the slider down, or less and less Sims as you put the slider up, are like the two ways of thinking about it. All right, Deshaun said, how are you handling questionable tags on players that have a significant role in NBA DFS? Like, for example, on today's slate, Sengun and Jalen Johnson have questionable tags. Would set a rule to use at least 3 players from that game to try to get the best late swap advantage, or would you lock in Sengun and Jalen Johnson into lineups? All right, very good question. So, yeah, there are a lot of questionable players on today's slate. Like, for instance, if we come in here, we go to status, we just look at the questionables. You know, we see a lot of high salary players questionable. Jalen Johnson, Sengun, Sarr, Giddey, Gillespie, Gobert, right? Those are all guys above 6K salary that are pretty important. And even they have some pretty good ownerships as well, right? These players are rolled out. They are going to open up a lot of value opportunities across the slate. I'd say the first thing I like to look at is, where is this game on the slate? How many games are locking prior to these big spots, right? It's like number one, top 2 projected players that are questionable, like you mentioned, Johnson and Sengun. Well, this is a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 game slate. Only 3 games will have, or actually only 2 games will have locked by the time we find out this news, right? So like, Sarr, for instance, we're going to know pre-slate. Giddy, Sengun, and Johnson are all in this second window. So I am pretty comfortable not doing anything special because only 2 out of 8 games are starting before this window. Even if I play some players from this early game, I think that's okay. And I think that my lineups are still going to have plenty of spots available to fit in any value pieces. And then the rest of the games on the slate, right? So like only 2 out of 8, which is like 25% of games are locking. So I'm not over adjusting for this scenario. I think where this question gets really interesting is like, well, what if these players were on the later half of the game, right? There's a couple different ways you can go about this. There's higher risk approaches and lower risk approaches. I think that the safest approach is one, you do nothing and you act as if they are going to play and you react to the news the same way everyone else is going to react to the news, right? Everybody is in the same bubble because nobody knows if they're going to play or not. So when you don't adjust, the players get ruled out, and then you do adjust, generally you're going to get about as much of the new value that opens up as other people, right? You're kind of playing it close to the field there. You're not doing anything in one direction or another. The other option is kind of some of the things that you mentioned here, where number one is you do something to intentionally leave additional lineup spots available in the event that players are ruled out, right? So like, let's say that, you know, I'm trying to optimize for players questionable in like the later games. You could do exactly what you said. You could set some type of rule where I would say, hey, let's use at least 3 players from these, I would say these last 3 games, right? Let's say the questionable players are over here. Hey, I'm gonna select all 3 of these teams because I'm expecting the news to come out for the first 2 games. And we're going to see if these players are in or out. If they're in, then I can just play any players from these games. But if they're out, then that should open up some additional value, allow me to take the most advantage possible. The part you need to understand is that you are intentionally probably skipping playing some of these earlier players who might be better plays than if the players are ruled in, right? So it's like, okay, the best outcome is that these players are ruled out and I take more advantage of the new value than the field does, right? That's best outcome possible. The next level down would be that these players are ruled in and now I just have to play these players from these games because they weren't ruled out. So it's not like you're playing terrible plays, but what's happening is like maybe there were some marginally better plays earlier. Well, you didn't get as much exposure to them because you were trying to wait, right? So you might end up on like marginally worse plays than if you had left it open from the beginning. So you have to know there's always like a little risk when you do stuff like that. I think it's okay to do. Now, I don't really think players are avoiding rostering these players because they're questionable. I know you said like, hey, would you lock them in your lineups? Like, oh, maybe players are afraid of these plays, so their ownership is going to come in like a little bit depressed. That hasn't been my experience. I think players kind of take the other approach of like, treat them as in until they are out. I think that's probably like the most common approach. So you could take the higher risk approach of like trying to optimize as if they are out. I've tried this and I've like tried to guess when players are going to be out versus like when players are going to be in. And it is like so hard to do, honestly. I'm like, okay, you know, the Spurs are on a back-to-back. Today they are on the road. Tomorrow they are at home against the Lakers. It's a big game. You know, Wemby is questionable on day one of the back-to-back. If Wemby's going to sit, he's going to sit today on the road in this game against an opponent they're favored against. And then he's going to play tomorrow against the Lakers in like a bigger game, right? Like, okay, yeah, that makes a ton of sense. You know, let's go. And then he ends up playing, you know, game one. And I just like have no idea. You know, I've tried to guess. And, you know, you try to like use past stuff. Like, okay, Zion, you know, is usually going to sit here. And then Zion plays. So, you know, if you guys can come up with a better way of figuring out when players are likely to sit or likely to start, and you can, you know, at a good clip, like be correct, then yeah, you know, take full advantage of it. I haven't figured out how to do that. And I am like so in tune with what is happening in the NBA. But that does not mean I'm the best at it. So give it your best shot. I've definitely given it mine, and I've chosen to just play them until they're out because I haven't been able to figure out the other side of that coin. All right, next question. I want to use some modeling tools to further enhance SaberSim tools and go beyond boilerplate builds after scraping contest data. Any idea of where to start / look to increase my ROI? You know, honestly, when I'm trying to, you know, get better and trying to figure out what I can do different, I like to study the best players in the lobby. Now, how do you find the best players in the lobby? Well, usually that means looking at contests that you might not even be playing, right? So like we go back to yesterday, this is where Contest Flashback is, you know, a very handy tool. So in my opinion, the best players in the lobby are going to be the players entering the most every single day. It means that they've built up good bankrolls. If they're simming well, even better. So let's say I want to go look at the Mega Slam yesterday. And I want to look at people maxing this out, spending the most money to play this slate. Okay, it looks like the most entries you can enter was 90. So I'm going to look at people who enter 90. I'm going to sort by sim ROI. Now, there's a couple different ways to kind of go about this. Some people like to look at the highest sim ROI. Some people like to look at some of the people who win the most money. I think you can do both things, right? Like it just so happens KJK here was the highest sim ROI-er, and it looks like they had like a top three finish probably, 60K in winnings, might have gotten second or third. And then there is and he was a maxer, right? This is like one of the maxers. There's another user here, Need Lunch Money, also maxed. Looks like they won the contest with 171K in winnings. So they got the first place prize and then cashed elsewhere. You know, I think these are two good players to start with, right? Entering the most and also profiting heavily. So in order to study them, right? Well, what I would want to do is click the plus icon on this username, go to projections, and now I can do a couple different things, right? I can look at, okay, what were their most exposed plays? Who were they on the most? I could also say, hey, how did they handle, you know, the quote unquote chalk, right? So if we sort by actual own, what are their percentages here in terms of exposure? We could look at how they handled the highest value plays. We could look at how they handled the highest projected plays, right? We can basically chop up the data all these different ways in order to figure out, you know, where were they leveraged on. The only thing with leverage, just like be aware that this is still going off of projected own. So like here, right, we see, and I think this is flagship. This would have been high stakes MME. So that's the live bucket. Okay, yeah, if you use the live buckets, this actually shows their actual leverage. So in terms of, like, let's go to value. Okay, so like some of the highest value plays over on Landale, kind of even with Horford, even with Williams, very under on Brandon Williams. You know, that's kind of interesting, right? Maybe one thing I noticed is that he didn't start. He was kind of like value off the bench. Actually played okay. Projection and actual are like actually really close together, but they faded this player, right? Okay, we can look at their top leverages, bottom leverages. Hey, they played a lot of LaMelo, a lot of LaMelo. Actually, he was like 5% owned. LaMelo was like a late starter announcement, usually has been coming off the bench, got announced starting. You know, that's kind of interesting, right? Maybe they thought he was going to play a lot more minutes, and it didn't work out, but they still won. Players they were under the field on, right? You're basically trying to make sense of the decisions that they made, or like, okay, how could they have arrived at these decisions? Or, you know, okay, you know, I kind of take a snapshot of like what this player did. Great. Now I go over to the other player we talked about, right? Are there similarities and things that they did? Hey, this user also under on Brandon Williams, right? Okay. You know, that's pretty interesting. They were actually a little bit lower on Horford here, where the other user was like a little bit closer to the field. What about some of the value plays? Okay, also played Landale. Didn't play very much Amari Williams. What were their top exposures? They played a lot more Jared Allen, kind of closer to the field here. But yeah, it's like taking it. And then seeing if there's anything you want to change, right? Hey, what kind of stacks did these guys play? Hey, okay, they played up to a 3 stack. Did anybody play 4 stacks, right? You can bounce around and look at all these different things. This player allowed 3s. But yeah, I think Flashback allows you to look at all these different players, find the similarities, find the differences, take a little bit from this person, take a little bit from that person, and all of a sudden, you know, you've taken all these little pieces, and then now you've kind of created your own process from that. Follow up. Do you think that looking at the player level is too granular? Are the top 1% of players looking more at the stack / slate level? Thank you in advance. Yeah, I think that you can learn things. I think you can learn different things from looking at it from different angles, right? I think in a sport like NBA, you almost want to look at the player level. I think in a sport like MLB or NHL, you do want to kind of zoom out a little more and look at kind of the stack levels because correlation kind of matters more, right? Correlation matters a little bit less than NBA. So I think you need to get to the player level, but I think it'll depend, right? NFL, you might want to look at stack types or team stacks. In NHL, like what lines are they on? In MLB, like is it 5 stacks or 4 stacks or 2 stacks? How are they handling the chalk and the highest total runs, right? So there's not like a one-size-fits-all answer. You kind of have to know some of like the sport context. I think NBA, you can get to the player level. I think on like some of those other sports, you might not want to as much. Deshaun said, if I bump up the correlation slider in NBA, what will that do? Will it create more team stacks and game stacks during the sim? Will it do more like negative correlated players that cannibalize each other's usage? Okay, so if we go to NBA. So the important part to understand is that the correlation slider amplifies the correlations between players. So the value of the correlation is going to be really important. And what this means is Luka's highest negative correlation is negative 0.18. So it's negative 0.18 versus 0.08. So the negatives are effectively bigger than the positive correlations. When you increase the correlation slider, it's going to amplify these And in both directions, it's going to push the negative correlated players farther apart, and then it's going to move the positively correlated players closer together. But in terms of the slider, it's going to have a bigger effect on the players that are negatively correlated, since these values are bigger to start with. So I think that in a sport like NBA, it would probably lead to having less of these negative correlated players. And then it would lead to a little bit more of the positive correlated players. I don't think these positive correlations are big enough to see a massive jump in terms of game stacks or team stacks, because these are all kind of single digit correlation. Like if you go and look at a sport like NFL, you know, JSN and Sam Darnold are going to have a very high positive correlation, 0.3, 0.4, right? You look at batters in an MLB lineup, they're going to be like 0.18, 0.2, 0.22, stuff like that. So those correlations are just a lot higher to start with. So I'm basically saying I don't think the positive correlations are big enough alone where the correlation slider is going to now create a ton of game stacks. I think what it does more is it makes the bar higher for these negative correlated players to end up in lineups together. All right. So far, so good. Another question in office hours. What are some tools slash methods for the process that can take NBA builds to the next level that people may overlook? I've been getting a few 1% lineups, but have been just outside the top 20 in 20 max contests. Well, sounds like you're doing something right. You know, if you're that high up in the contest, you're definitely, you know, live, I would say, to make it into the, you know, the top 10, et cetera. I think going back to what we were doing in flashback, right? Study your contests too, right? Don't only study the best players in the lobby. Like, hey, what are the players in my contest doing? Because those structures may be different, right? So like what I like to do is look at my contest, look at the highest sim ROIers in the contests I'm playing compared to what I'm doing, as well as those other contests, kind of like we just showed. So I think it's okay to study your contests and maybe names you don't know, because you want to see what those users are doing that are having the outcome that you want in your own contest. So mix in that type of review as well. All right. I think we are all caught up here. Appreciate you guys tuning in. I'll be back tomorrow, 4 p.m. Eastern, for our next show. So until then, everybody, take care. Good luck. Thanks. Bye.